People are struggling with different things, and these are Paul's words to them, beginning at verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. So don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice. And the God of peace will be with you. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. And I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it's like to be in need, and I know what it's like to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through Him who gives me strength. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The last few weeks we've been looking at what God will grow in your life, and today it's joy. We're talking about how God will grow joy in your life. Anybody know the show Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee? Have you seen that show? The Jerry Seinfeld show? Not seen it, some of you? Like, it's become a great hit. Like, it's like, does Jerry Seinfeld really need another hit show? Well, he's got one. So in this show, he drives around and he picks up comedians, and they just drive around in their cars, kind of cracking each other up, joking, and then they stop at a coffee shop, and they get coffee, and they sit, and they just crack each other up. That's what it is. It's called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. So he picks up Eddie Murphy, Alec Baldwin, Ellen DeGeneres, people like that, and they just drive around, cracking each other up. On one episode, he picked up Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who was Elaine in the Seinfeld show, and they just sat in a coffee shop and cracked each other up. In fact, what he said to Elaine as they sat there with this, he said, "Today, I like any sentence that starts with, 'Do you remember?'" And so they just remembered and they laughed. My favorite episode was when Jerry Seinfeld picked up Barack Obama. Which is a bit weird, because he's technically not a comedian, he's a president, and the show was called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. So Jerry Seinfeld goes to pick up Barack Obama, and he gets to the White House, and Barack Obama's there, and Barack Obama says to his security guard, "Harry, don't shoot him, he's a very funny guy, we all like him. My poll numbers would go down if you did harm to Jerry Seinfeld." And then they get into this vintage Corvette that Jerry Seinfeld drove up. They get into it, but the Secret Service guy won't let them off the property. So they just circle around the driveway at the front of the White House. And then they get out of the car, they finally get to a place where they can sit and have coffee. It's downstairs in the kitchen, in the White House kitchen down in the basement. And they're sitting there and they're having coffee. And Obama says, "I really do well with the 0 to 8 demographic. They love me partly because they think my ears are big, so I look a little like a cartoon character. And then little kids love saying my name, but it's all one big name, Barack Obama. Barack Obama." It's like a Nickelodeon thing, he says. And they just sat there laughing. That's the show. I love comedy. I really do. I love stand-up. I guess it's because I like to laugh. Anybody here not like to laugh? We all like to laugh. Here's the thing. The Bible promises joy. But joy and laughter aren't the same things. Joy is something that's deep. Joy is something that lives in the very deepest parts of our hearts and it perseveres. Like, laughter is temporary. Joy lasts. I guess that's the simplest way to put it. Joy is deep-seated. It's a happiness that endures. Think about people like, I mean, there are so many examples of people who laughed and made us laugh, but they could never find joy for themselves. Robin Williams, what a gift at making people laugh. I just read a book about John Candy. I love John Candy. John Candy would do anything to make people laugh. He just wanted to please people. Like, he was just a jolly, lovable guy. But he could never find joy in his own life. There's a huge difference between laughter and joy. What is it that gives real joy, true joy? And so, here's the title. Do you know where this title came from? Anybody? You know. I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Down in my heart. We didn't even practice that. That's where it comes from. Down in my heart. Do you remember that song?
Yes.
Sure you do. And I'm so happy, so very happy. I've got the love of Jesus in my heart. That song could be a source of considerable irritation to people. You walk into a church and I'm really feeling it. That happened to me once. I was going through just a rough time in my life. I walked into a church and they were singing that song. They seemed really happy about it. And I didn't begrudge a single person in that church for singing that song. I really didn't. But I will tell you that I wondered how that could be real in my life. It's not laughter. I mean, I could have went out of that church on that day and laughed at somebody's joke. That's not joy. It's not the same. We are so conditioned in our culture to think that joy is found in certain places, aren't we? And we can spend all of our lives investing in this place where our culture tells us that this is where joy is found, and then all these years later look back on that and realize that we've invested in the wrong thing. Jesus talked about that all the time. And here's where joy is found. If you try to find joy here, you're not going to find it. And we're kind of like, at some point, it's like, have I been punked? Like, have I been lied to all my life? Because, like, I put all my eggs in that basket, and now you're telling me that's not even where joy is found? That's our culture, isn't it? Our culture teaches us to look in certain places for happiness, and Jesus is going, hold on a second, you might want to look somewhere else. Paul says anybody can have joy. We just read it. I'm going to show you a verse that just blows my mind, this verse. We had the Watoto Choir here, a choir of Ugandan orphans. And they were filled, as far as I could tell, with such joy. And we look at certain people, and there's a part of us that's kind of like, you know, how is it that you know joy? Like, we're Canadians. Like, we're supposed to be the ones that have everything. And you come, and you have almost nothing, but you have this, you're just emanating what I want. And Paul says, you can have joy as a parent. I don't know if anybody would ever have kids if they knew what a responsibility it is to raise kids properly. Because it's our job as parents to show our children where true joy is found. Isn't it? Like, I mean, if we spend all the time that they're with us and showing them, and then they get older and they look back and they're like, they were wrong. Like, it's my job as a parent to teach my children where true joy is found, because parents more than anything want their kids to be happy. That's all a parent wants for their child. Where do you find the joy? And through Jesus. And then reflected through all the words that Paul writes, it's like joy is a cornerstone. It's not joy
might be a part of this community of faith. Jesus said joy has to be there. Joy is essential. At Christmas time, we have a wreath, as most churches do. We light the candles on the wreath, and one of those candles is joy. Jesus just said, if there is no joy in your community of faith, if there is no joy in your life, there's the cornerstone is just missing. Things are going to start to crumble. And we're like, okay. They're going to tell me how that happens, right? Jesus and then Paul, and all Paul's writings reflects that. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. For Jesus, if we can connect to the God that he reveals, this joy will be yours. And we're like, I appreciate the sentiment. Tell me how that works. Here's what Paul says. Here's the verse that just... I've shown this before, but isn't this just the most incredible thing? Like, whatever the... I just lost my job. I have a spouse who has cancer. I mean, really, Paul? Whatever the circumstances, you're saying this is so deep in my heart, it's so deep down in my heart, that you're saying it doesn't matter what happens around me. There's nothing that can touch that joy. The word content in some translations is translated as joy. I've learned to be joyful, whatever the circumstances, Paul said. And sometimes we're like, okay, character in the Bible called Paul. Like, you're a saint. You're like, you have everything you need. You're like the perfect person. Like, it's easy for you to say, you know, you can be joyful, but you don't know, like, the stuff I'm living through. You don't know how dysfunctional my life is. You're St. Paul. It doesn't hold any weight. It starts to hold weight when you find out what kind of person Paul was and what he went through. Paul wrote that verse from prison. He was in a prison. Can you, like, imagine in your mind's eye what a prison looks like in Rome 2,000 years ago. That's what Paul was when he wrote these words. I guess they gave him paper, I bet, or whatever it was they wrote on, which is surprising in of itself. But he wrote some of his letters while he was in prison. Imagine the atmosphere, imagine the food they gave him to eat. Imagine Roman soldiers looking over his shoulder as he wrote words. And before he was put in prison, Paul did not have an easy life. He was persecuted for talking about Jesus in places that didn't believe in Jesus. He was beat up. He was shipwrecked 3 times. Like, Paul did not have an easy life. So we can't stand back and say, Paul, it's not connecting to me because you're St. Paul. We can't say that because Paul had a harder life than anybody here, I would imagine. And there is a part in the Bible that we now call 2 Corinthians in chapter 12, where Paul talks about a thorn in his side. A thorn in his side. And in that passage, Paul asks God, pleads with God 3 times to take that thorn in his side away from him because it's causing him pain. Paul suffered. And still Paul says, rejoice, rejoice, and again I say rejoice. How does that work? How can you be joyful in those circumstances, living in this real world that Paul also lived in? And so I just want to show you 2 verses that I read from Philippians 4 to find some guidelines around how to find the joy that Jesus is talking about. This is just really simple stuff. It's simple to understand. Here's the first. This is the verse I read. This is it. I want to show you 3 things that come out of these words. The Lord is near. Don't be anxious about anything. And we're like, come on. Like, is it really possible to live your life and not be anxious about anything? Don't be anxious about anything. But in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Here's the first part. The Lord is near. You know all about the parent chair. I've spoken a couple times about the parent chair in funerals. Do you not know all about the parent chair? If you take a child into the dentist's office and their name is called, they'll walk in, but before they get to the chair that they have to sit in to have their teeth worked on, they'll turn around and they'll say, aren't you coming? And then you say, am I allowed to go in there with you? And they'll go, yeah, there's the parent chair. And so you walk in, and sure enough, There's the big dentist's chair that the patient sits in, and right beside it is the chair. It's the parent chair, your child will tell you. The parents are allowed to come in. And if you're lucky, it'll be like a Reader's Digest on the table beside that chair, and you can read as you're waiting. And then the child will hop up into the chair, feeling strength, because you are sitting there with them. It's the parent chair. The Lord is near. Whatever chairs you have to get into in your life, chairs that you know are going to give you pain, you know the parent is there. And you know the parent, just the presence of the parent gives you strength, doesn't it? It's just the parent being there will give you strength. Paul is saying, look, the Lord is near. If you understand and then experience the Lord is near, it's going to give you joy in difficult times. Now please understand this one thing. This is just so important to understand in terms of God being near. When a parent comes into the chair room and the child's in the chair, the parent sits down, the parent does not come into that room to take the child out of the chair. The parent just comes in to be with. Because there are some things in life that we just have to endure. But does that make sense? You're not coming in there to be with your child to say, you don't need to get this work done. You're not gonna take the pain away. You're gonna be with them in their pain. Do we understand this illustration? Here's the second part. Don't be anxious. But in every situation, just pray. Look, when the child is in the chair, if you've ever been through this, they will talk to you like the second the dentist's fingers is out of their mouth. They're going to say something to you because they can't see you. They're going to say something to just make sure you're still there. Daddy, you still there? I'm still here. This is okay. It doesn't hurt as much as I thought it would. Okay, good. I'm still here. I'm not going to leave. I'm not going anywhere. That's what prayer is. Paul says pray without ceasing. Every 3 minutes, you could just say, God, are you still there? I'm still here. You promised you'd give me strength through my painful times. I'm still here. I'm not going anywhere. You promised that you would comfort me as I'm going through the valley of the shadow. I'm still here. That's what prayer is. It's all it is. Last thing. Thanksgiving. If we want to be joyful in our lives, we got to find a way to be thankful. If we are thankful, this is the life truth, doesn't matter what religion you're from, doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter what race you are, this is the life truth. If we are thankful for the things we have in life, we will be joyful. It's just like, it's simple, but it's hard to do because we just take for granted all the things we're surrounded with each and every day are just beautiful, good things. And we just take for granted that those things are going to be around. And we just don't live in a spirit of thanksgiving for what we have, minute by minute. Last weekend, we went to Toronto to see my niece, whose name is Savannah. She sang here before. We went to see her, what she called a recital. Now, the word recital makes you think of certain things. I call it a showcase. She goes to Humber College for Performing Arts. So part of what they do is they do their showcase and they have adjudicators who mark them. And they do 7 songs that are original songs they wrote for the audience. And we went to watch her. And I gotta tell you, this is my brother's daughter. She's a bit of a powerhouse. Like, she is a talented woman. And we just when we left, we were just filled with like a spirit of thanksgiving. And we're driving home that night on Airport Road. And the weather kind of reflected our mood. Is that called pathetic fallacy? Is that the literary term? It is. We were just feeling like, man, that was just amazing, and the talent, and we're driving home, and it was a beautiful, clear night, a full moon, the kind of night you could turn your headlights out and just see everything. Did you ever used to do that before they made cars where you actually couldn't turn headlights off? It just ruined all our fun. We used to do that all the time. It was one of those nights with full moon, clear road, not a lot of traffic. And because it was so clear and beautiful and not a lot of traffic, the speed that I was driving at exceeded the limit down Airport Road. About halfway to Stainer, I saw angry red lights flashing through the rearview mirror. Two squad cars coming at me like Darth Vader in the Death Star ship. I mean, they were flying at me. And I thought, great, there goes my perfect night. And as I started the downshift, because I was trying to slow down, I discovered that my transmission was gone. Like, I had no transmission. And then Haven from the back seat says, I smell something burning. The clutch was gone. And I pull over and I'm trying to, and on top of that, at that moment, a snowstorm hit us. Like, just, I'm not making this up. Kimberly Volkett, Haven was there. Like, and like so much for our perfect night. Speeding ticket, blown transmission out in the middle of nowhere, and a snowstorm. Isn't that the nature of our lives? Like, listen. How many times are you just driving along in your good life? And everything's just fine, and you got a full moon, and you got light around you, and everything's just good, and you're just, but you just don't think about it that much. Why is it that we have to lose something before we appreciate what we have? Why is that? Well, fortunately, these lights bobbing up, these angry red lights, they went right by us. I know, he was on his way somewhere else. It's like, okay, so that was good. And then Ian and his fiance Leanne, their son Ian, who's here, they were only a couple of kilometers behind us on Airport Road because they were at the same show. We didn't know they were that close. So we had only been pulled over a minute or two, and they pulled up, and they took my mom and Haven into their car. And they went home, and then Kimberly and I sat and waited for the tow truck. We only waited about 15 minutes. Tow truck comes, we get into the tow truck, driving through this snowstorm, when only half an hour ago it was just a beautiful, clear night. And then we saw the red lights again, just south of Stainer. There had been a terrible accident. That's what they were going for. And we drove by that accident. Got home at about 2 in the morning. We were just so thankful we got home. Why is it that we have to lose something before? I just think sometimes we need a little perspective. When you drive by an accident like that, you suddenly get perspective. It's true. I mean, at the same time, you're saying a prayer for those people that are in the ditch, and we don't know how injured they were. At the same time you're saying that prayer, you're also saying a prayer for Thanksgiving for yourself, because it wasn't you. It's true. Like, go to Sick Kids Hospital. That will give you some perspective. Because if your child is not sick or injured, live your life in a spirit of Thanksgiving every day. Go to a nursing home. Give you a little perspective. And as much as you pray for those people in that nursing home, you leave just filled with thanksgiving that you have a health, you have your health, and you still have your home that you're living in. Spend some time with someone who's struggling with substance abuse. What if your son was on one of those cruise ships waiting? As much as you pray for people that have someone they love on a cruise ship waiting to see whether or not they get the coronavirus, as you pray for them, you're praying a prayer of thanksgiving. Why do we need to lose stuff before? Look, Paul's just saying if you live in a spirit of thanksgiving, you're going to be filled with joy in your life. It's going to happen. You can't not be joyful if you live your life in a spirit of thanksgiving. Last thing. On Saturday morning, I came out into the church. It was really early, it was about 7. This was the morning after the kids' choir sang, but there were total choir. I come out, and they had cleaned everything. There wasn't any evidence this choir was even here. It's amazing. They came at noon on Friday, on Valentine's Day. They set up, they must have had just hundreds of pounds of equipment. I mean, it was pretty high tech. They set it all up, they did their presentation. When they were done, they just ripped, fell down, and they were gone. There was no evidence anywhere that they were even here, except in my memory. And I'm standing here in this quiet room. It still smelled like the people that were here the night before. But I'm remembering their faces, and they're dancing, and they're singing, and I'm just remembering all that, and it was so weird. Because it was so quiet, and they were gone, but yet there was a spirit of celebration still in the room. And I thought to myself, this is the last, for Paul, this is the last way that we can experience joy in our lives that I've experienced more times than I could ever remember. And that is when people come together who initially we think are very different, but then we figure out that we're all the same. When people come together to help someone else, or to volunteer their time, or to find a way to give themselves away to somebody else, giving themselves to something bigger than just themselves, that's when you can experience the joy of the Lord, as Paul puts it. It happens here all the time. We all know that's true, because you've all experienced that. When you give something to somebody else, that's how you experience the joy of Christ. Has it been your experience that people who help other people tend to be more joy-filled? That's the joy that's real, and it's not laughter, and it gets deep down into your heart. We give Paul the last word. The joy of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus. Amen. So we have a brand new hymn.